You are a patient at a high-security psychiatric hospital. There is a new chef in the kitchen, a patient like you, that specialises in turning out marvellous cakes such as banoffee-flavoured sponge, ginger sponge and lemon sponge. They also make a good chicken curry, but their personal favourite easy quick meal is cheese, tomato and onion on toast cooked in the oven. You then discover why they are there with you. A very long list of offences, but one particular instance of cannibalism stands out. Would you suddenly lose your appetite? This is the case of Graham Fisher, and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Murder Me Monday podcast. I'm Cameron, and joined with me is Mother.
Hello.
The start of that, I was really confused. I don't know the read that you're going to do that intros it into the case. It can kind of be our hook. If we're being really specific, I should have probably cut that and put that out on Instagram or something as an advertising part for you can listen to this and this is what we talk about. It was weirdly sexual, like Nigella Lawson. Where I'm like, a knob of butter. Ah, that's all I can think of. And you said that the person that's cooking it is in there for something funky.
Yes.
So he's got like banoffee pies and cheesecakes. There's definitely a jizzy biscuit somewhere because I would not want to eat food prepared. I always think it's weird that the prisoners prepare the food because I just wouldn't trust it.
No.
I know a weapon in prison that's common is someone that's got AIDS or hepatitis or sepsis or something. You get their like fluids on a knife and you shiv them with it. And you shank them with the shiv. It's like a damage over time effect.
I did not know
that. Yeah, you sort of debuff them. You make them sick from it. Yeah.
Oh, you live in
that. That's really common. No.
So one documentary that appears to be no longer available about this is from Series 2 of Murder by the Sea. And there's one YouTube video of a compilation where the crimes were actually broadcast on Crime Watch in the UK. It was over two different episodes because no one realised that these were all tied together. That one's in the show notes. There's no court transcripts, no books, nothing else. You also all know by now I do like a clear timeline. So this is in the order of the crimes happening rather than when the authorities put this all together. So let us go to Bromley. It used to be part of Kent, the Garden of England, but in 1965 became one of the 13 metropolitan boroughs of London. It's actually only 10 miles from Charing Cross Station. 1973, I think, is the year. A child was born by the name of Graham Fisher. We know nothing about his childhood, except it's been described as very unhappy and he was exposed to things that no child should be. This childhood left him with pent-up rage and a very skewed attitude towards sex and violence that would explode when he was 18 in 1991, but he would not be convicted of this offence until much later. So, still in Bromley, a 40-year-old woman, described as very vulnerable, was found laying in a hallway of her flat by relatives. The woman told her relatives that she'd been assaulted, but no one reported it for 2 years. Now, the term vulnerable could mean anything, couldn't it? Mentally unwell, maybe. Perhaps they thought she would either made the story up for attention or just imagined it. We'll never know why it wasn't reported. 1993. He strangled his then girlfriend, luckily not killing her, and burned her 2-year-old son's genitals with a cigarette. He served 2 years in prison for that and was released in 1995.
I often make not concessions or excuses for people, but I can see why someone's had something happen to them and they can kind of understand that that's why they have the response to something. I don't agree with it, but you can understand it.
Yes.
I think I made an analogy to you the other day that if someone went to the shops, bought some cheese, came back and killed their mum, you'd be like, what the fuck? Someone went to the shops, bought some cheese, they came back and their mum ripped into them for buying the wrong cheese and they've got a history of abuse and the mum's always, you know what I mean, the nagging type. Mm-hmm. They snap, they kill them. You can't agree with it, but you can see why. This guy's got a history of sexually assaulting potentially a vulnerable person, mm-hmm. which for a start is they're the ones you want to protect in society, people that can't help yep. themselves. And doing that to a child, man, a child can't do anything to you that could make you want to do that.
No.
You can't excuse that. No.
No.
And I'm all one for reform and rehab and stuff, but someone like this gets put in the bin.
Mm-hmm. So 22 years old he is. He drifts around Kent and the south coast of England, places like St Mary's Cray, Mottingham and Sydenham, until he ends up in Hastings. Hastings is usually thought of as a retirement community, but it's also a fishing port with the UK's largest beach based fishing fleet. It's been based on the same shingle beach below the cliffs at Hastings for at least 400, possibly 600 years.
I want to say well done there for you for not fucking up that sentence. I saw the pause and the confusion on your face, but you usually struggle with words that have the, like, I'm not a pheasant plucker, I'm a pheasant plucker's son. I pluck pheasants till the pheasant plucking's done. You'd be like,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. So Hastings got an estimated population of roughly 93K, so it's a bit decent size. Claire Letchford, who was aged 40, lived in what we call a basement flat in Hastings. It was probably an old Victorian building that would have had servants' quarters, so below stairs, and was converted into separate residences. Very, very common, but I wouldn't want to live in a basement flat because of flooding. That would be my absolute overriding fear. She was described as a recluse. Her father is on the Crime Watch video saying that she's very lonely living in the basement and he'd hope to reintegrate her into society. I thought that was a very odd thing to say and there was never any explanation for that. But he was a much older chap and it may have been a simple turn of phrase from the time. It was just very odd. Now, her father used to go and visit her every Sunday around 3 p.m. and they would go shopping and then he would take her out for what was called high tea, which I took to mean, you know, tea and cake, maybe a finger sandwich or two. And they would return to Claire's flat around 5 p.m. and he would say his goodbyes and come back the following week. Sunday, the 18th of January, 1998, Mr. Latchford went to Claire's flat as usual, but she wasn't there. Very unusual, but it was the time before mobile phones were very common and he had no idea what had happened, so he just went home. Obviously didn't have a key to let himself in. 7:15 p.m. Neighbours reported that Claire's flat was on fire. Authorities get there and break in and Claire was found in the hallway, badly burned, with a pair of shoelaces tied around her neck and a cushion cover over her head. She was subsequently found to have died from smoke inhalation, but she had also been strangled. What wasn't reported at the time was that a strip of flesh had been cut from Claire's arm and they couldn't find it. So it's what happened to the nipples again, isn't it, Cameron?
A little bit. Yeah. I was thinking of jerky for some reason.
Yeah.
They've been smoked and cut.
Yeah, we've had a few of these. Yeah. Sunday the 25th of January, 1998. Around 2:30 p.m. a train guard was checking the 1:11 train from Hastings to London Charing Cross at Orpington, so roughly 35 minutes from the end of the journey, and he found a woman in a toilet who had been severely beaten around the head and was bleeding profusely. She was a 19-year-old Czech student who had only been in the UK for 3 months and had been on a 16-minute train journey from home from Hastings to Battle. Yes, that really is a place. Think maybe Battle Abbey? Do you know? No, he doesn't know what we're talking about. She is taken to hospital and tells police that her attacker tried and failed to rape her. She is eventually returned home and is said to have still suffered from the after effects of the beating as she had a stroke, was left in a coma for 3 days and had to learn to walk and to speak again. So looking at the trains, I don't know if he could have gotten off it, or it's a direct route from Hastings to Orpington back then, but he could have had up to an hour with her, or she'd been left suffering for an hour in that toilet before that guard found her. Can you imagine the rage and force that must have been used? And no one saw it on a Sunday lunchtime train. Had she gone to the toilet and he rushed in behind her? We don't know. I don't doubt the student remember what happened.
Indiscriminate rage always confuses me. But it's almost like if someone dies via an accident that's completely unrelated to them, like construction work, something happens, a pipe falls down and kills them. That's just bad luck. Mm-hmm. Being in the wrong place at the wrong time and it changes your life. This is the same thing, but it's caused directly by someone. Yeah. It's like, how dare you have the audacity to ruin my life because you're a fuckbag?
I had to think about this case before we sat down to record it, and I'll go over what in my head I think may have been behind some of this, but... So we're still on Sunday the 25th of January.
Is there any tie-in for the women? Do they like the same age, roughly, the same height, look the same weight?
No. There is one thing that you've just hit on that I think is connected, but I'll go into that at the end, but it's not their age or their race or anything like that. So the police are doing the usual rounds of talking to neighbours, etc., to find out if anybody had seen or heard anything about what had happened to Claire. And they encounter a lady by the name of Beryl O'Connor, who lived just 100 yards away from Claire's flat. She was more commonly known by her middle name. She's often referred to as Dawn or Dawny by those that knew her. Again, she's described as vulnerable, but she was aged 75 and had lost her husband in the previous year, and she was quite frail and she was lonely. Neighbours had taken it upon themselves to keep an eye on her and to do a bit of shopping now and again if she wasn't feeling up to it. But she did like to pop into a local bar and have whiskey with an acquaintance, so she probably had good days and bad days.
I like old nans like that.
Yeah.
There's a clip that makes me laugh from the BBC way back in the day. It was testing if the public knew the difference between whiskey and scotch.
Yeah.
And there's this nan where she's like, I'm not sure, I'll give you another one. And she tries like 10 of them. And then she's like, is it whiskey? I'm like, no. And she's like, oh, well.
Yeah. So the police chat to her, but she has nothing to add to the investigation. They just make a note of her name and address and that they talk to her. All very normal procedure. Monday the 26th of January, around 9:20 a.m, a neighbour popped round to see Dawn, and they noticed what they thought was water on the letterbox and some on the floor outside the door. They couldn't find a leak and they got a bit worried, but it later turned out to be what was described as mineral oil. Later on that afternoon, around 2:40, Dawny rang a neighbour. And she and the neighbour chatted briefly, but she later described Dawn as being agitated, like she wanted to get out of her flat. But the neighbour forgot all about it because they were worrying over Claire's murder, which was round the corner, and just life in general. 3:20 that same day, the fire alarm in the block of flats goes off, and it's Dawn's place that's on fire. They find her dead inside the flat. She had been strangled and her clothing set on fire. Graham is picked up by the police to talk about Claire and Dawn's murder.
Why?
He was known around the area. He was, you know, he didn't have time. He must have been in some kind of trouble. They knew who he was. I suspect he was, you know, one of the local rough sleepers at that point.
Would they have known anything from him potentially doing this stuff to this vulnerable woman? I know you said you're doing it in order of what has happened rather than what the police know has happened.
Yeah, didn't know about the vulnerable woman, but they would have known about his previous conviction for assaulting his previous girlfriend. They would have run him, I'm guessing. They find they've got absolutely no evidence against Graham and he admits nothing, so they have to let him go. Lots of people speculated about that mineral oil, if it was some kind of mark or if he tried to slide his hand in through the letterbox. We don't know. May 1998, he moves on to Eastbourne, which is just down the coast from Hastings, where he sexually assaults two Spanish students at knife point and is finally picked up and convicted for indecent assault and sent to prison for 5 years. 2001, the prison have him assessed and he is declared a grave danger and is transferred to Broadmoor under Section 47 and 49 of the Mental Health Act. In effect, what that act means is that it allows mental health professionals to transfer you from prison to hospital for treatment. So to be transferred from prison to hospital, you must have a mental disorder and be so unwell that you need treatment in hospital. The Ministry of Justice has to approve leave and your discharge from hospital. You can also be treated without your permission. And you could go back to prison if your mental health gets better. If you're still in hospital when your sentence ends, the hospital can discharge you. But if you need to stay in hospital, they will move you onto a different section called a notional section 37. So he's in a bad way mentally, isn't he, if they've moved him out?
I was going to ask questions, but I waited this time and you actually answered all of them. I was going to say, is his time in the hospital, does that count towards his time in the prison? It does. If he needs to be in there for longer because he's still a bit backwards, is he there for longer? Yeah, but he gets transferred. That makes sense. I was going to ask those, but you...
Yeah. I see. I thought ahead by doing all the research on that one. It actually, you know, we've talked about Broadmoor before. It's a high-security psychiatric hospital in Berkshire, England. It's the oldest of the three high-security psychiatric hospitals in England, the other two being Ashworth near Liverpool and Rampton in Nottinghamshire. It's not a prison, but many of its patients are sent to it via the criminal justice system, but not all. However, the layout inside and the daily routines are intended to assist the therapy that's practiced there, rather than it being run as a prison. Yet, nearly all of the staff are members of the Prison Officers Association, as opposed to other health service unions and even the Royal College of Nursing. 2007, the police start to look into the case of that Czech student again. 2008, Grahams is in Broadmoor. They can keep him. They must have placed him on like Section 37, as I mentioned, as the prison sentence should have finished around 2003. He is undergoing therapy and treatment and may have started to work, possibly, because he tells his therapist about some of his other crimes. As in his words, they bothered him and he realised he was still a danger. Or maybe the fact that the police had gone to talk to him and it knew it would just be a matter of time before they caught him. All they have on him so far is the convictions, as we said, for his the assault on his ex-girlfriend and her son and the sexual assault of the Spanish students. But they must have suspected more. Him being questioned about Claire and Dawn at the time, as we said, and you wondered why. The police also started to work with the complex case unit of the Crown Prosecution Service. And in September of 2010, Graham goes on trial at Lewis Crown Court in Sussex with two counts of manslaughter, attempted rape, attempted murder, and two counts of rape. Those additional counts of rape refer back to that vulnerable victim found in a hallway that no one reported for 2 years. It seems he attacked her twice on two separate occasions in 1991. Graham, then aged 37, admitted the manslaughter of Claire and Dawn on the grounds of diminished responsibility. A consultant forensic psychiatrist told the court that Graham had a sexually sadistic aspect to his personality, and a lot of his rage stemmed from an unhappy childhood, but the reporting doesn't give us any more than that. He told investigators, after confessing to the rape, that he gained a thrill from seeing his victims frightened. He said, "She looked really scared, but this really turned me on even more." Graham was deemed to have a severe and enduring complex personality disorder. Remember that strip of flesh missing from Claire's arm? He admitted to eating it. No mention of Chianti or seasoning with lemon or lime like Zapata in episode 53. The police were unable to retrieve forensic evidence from any of the crime scenes. He also claimed responsibility for crimes where there was insufficient evidence and where no complaints had been made, which is quite interesting. Like he's playing a game and making the police work through stuff, and he somehow knows it won't go anywhere. That same month of September 2010, Graham is sentenced to 21 years, and the judge says that his detention in hospital would be subject to progress of his treatment. But he added it could be decades before Graham was released back into the community. The judge said it had been to his credit that he had decided whilst he was in Broadmoor to get these terrible crimes off his chest because he was concerned he was too dangerous to be, at that stage, transferred from Broadmoor to a less secure hospital, but also because he wanted to remain at Broadmoor. Realistically, it's what's called an indeterminate sentence. He has to do 21 years, but may never get out. But we're not finished. Oh, no. In 2012, he ended up back in the news, not because he ate anyone else, although he looked like he had. He was living it up on his 3 square meals a day and all his fluffy cakes and scoffing junk food, and had packed on the pounds. He'd gone up, depending on where you read, to either 21 or 23 stone in weight, or over 300 pounds, or roughly 146 kilos. He wanted bariatric surgery, a gastric band, and they gave him one. He was on the waiting list for 3 months when people wait years for actual medical operations. The NHS sent him to a private hospital for the £8,000 operation, then a stay in there whilst he recovered, which added another £7,000 to the cost. This did not go down well with the public when they found out. And that's where we leave him, with his rather unfortunate monobrow, which we'll see in the pictures, sat in Broadmoor. Me being very cynical here. He gets transferred in 2001 to Broadmoor, 4 years into a 5-year sentence. It's well known that they teach each other inside how to play the system. I also know that some prison psychiatrists are more gullible than others. Maybe he had heard all the tales that Broadmoor was cushy, and eventually decides he doesn't want to get out. He gets 3 square meals a day, can whip up fluffy sponges to his heart's content, no need to earn a living or anything. There are also a number of people who do wonder if Graham could have had anything to do with some other unsolved murders around the same locations and timescales. Christine McGovern was found dead in her flat in Walthamstow in East London. She was a known sex worker, but it was thought she was murdered by someone she knew. She had a Rottweiler dog, and there was no signs of forced entry. Her flat had been ransacked and possessions stolen. She was last seen alive about 6:30 p.m. on the 21st of June 1995 outside her house.
What happened to the dog?
Dog was unharmed, I believe.
Okay, good.
Yeah. She was found...
Silver lining. Yeah.
She was found dead, naked the next day by her friend. Her spine had been broken and she had a broken nose and severe bruising.
So the spine... Was she fighting Bane? Why did she have a broken spine? Was she pushed out or something?
No. I think he bent her backwards over his legs.
How big is this guy? I know you said he's a big bastard because he's eating cake all the time in prison. But is he like
he's
a big
lumbering,
guy?
He's okay. A lumbering Hulk, yeah. However, her post-mortem gave the cause of death as asphyxiation. Now, I'm not sure if he has links or a connection with East London, but I guess it's possible. That's June 1995. And no fire. One other case that people speculate on is whether the same timescale of 1995 as the fire lighting and a link to Walthamstow was the case of Joy Hewer. She was 52. She was stabbed and sexually assaulted in her 6th floor flat and was set on fire in October of 1995. People also wondered about Bobby Jo Jenkins being murdered in Hastings in February 1997. She was a 13-year-old schoolgirl who was bludgeoned to death at the time, and her foster father was convicted, and subsequently, after 2 retrials in which the jury was unable to reach a verdict, he was formally acquitted, Sean Jenkins. No one else has been convicted in that case, and I think it's one of those that the police term not looking at anyone else for. I do think Graham Fisher probably did do way more than he's admitted, and the police can't seem to find any forensic evidence at any crime scene. And as he won't admit anything until they do have more proof, and the prosecutors actually described him at trial as a sexual sadist.
Why wouldn't he admit to them? Because that would just cement him in Broadmoor as much as possible, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Or is he worried that the convictions or the sentencing, sorry, would be too severe for it to warrant being in a mental hospital and just moving into a normal prison?
I think that's part and parcel of it, yeah.
He's concerned about being removed, isn't he?
Yes.
And why would you then admit to something when there's a chance, the high chances are you're going to stay in the prison you want, so don't rock the boat, as it were.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So around the time of his bariatric surgery, a letter came to light where he'd written to someone saying how he wanted a job helping people through trauma, but added, given my criminal record, it is highly unlikely. Currently, my future is uncertain.
Yeah, how about you don't put people with histories of abuse with people that are vulnerable and seeking help from potentially their abuse?
Yeah. I think he's very manipulative and will say whatever he thinks will benefit him at any given time. And whilst Broadmoor isn't a prison, like we said, he's being kept away from the public and we're safer for that. I also did wonder, going back to why he may have done this, there's very little come out about his childhood. Very, very little. The courts will have had reports, but that will not be released. And the reporters can't report on it.
Something had to have gone wrong for him to be this damaged.
Yeah. And the fact is the one thing that they all had in common with the fact that they were women. So it's misogyny, isn't it, for me? The fact is that some of these women were younger and some of these women were older. So maybe it's a mother thing, a grandmother thing, or a combination of he hated both of them.
It could be just that's what presented itself at the time. That was easy to do. It makes sense to, makes sense for him to go after vulnerable people.
Yeah.
Because they're weaker and easier to attack.
I'm literally just speculating. I've got no answer to it. It's just, I think, I'm very glad he's locked up. And I should think people on the South Coast are very glad he's locked up. Claire's father, who used to take her out to Sunday tea, sadly died before Graham Fisher was caught. So he never knew what had actually happened. Bless him.
It's not the same, but with him assaulting people and then killing them, do you think he's killed them because it removes any chance of being identified as the perpetrator? Removes the victim's ability to be vocal?
I think that was just an escalation of his behaviour, because of many of his earlier assaults, he didn't kill them, but the Czech student, he almost killed her. And I think it's his rage coming out. I don't know if it was deliberate or he just couldn't stop himself by that point. And it's the fire setting, which would go back to your point of being the fire setting to remove any forensic evidence.
That's what I thought the mineral oil might be for. Because I know you put mineral oil over... you get like silicone sprays. You use mineral oil, that you can use that over the silicone and wipe that off and that gets rid of the silicone. I'm not sure if he's doing it to mask any sort of forensic side if it's coated in mineral oil.
It was strange. But
I'm picturing a very large man looped up with mineral oil here, and that's not... But.
The Crime Watch reconstruction, I mean, the problem is with Crime Watch, some of it is...
it's dramatised for television.
Yes, exactly. And they literally showed what looked like... It looked like vegetable oil, cooking oil on the door, on the letterbox, and they were rubbing it with their fingers. And I was watching it and realising a lot of the stuff that was being said and going on, it was... dramatic license. So what the actual mineral oil looked like, I don't know. So some of the speculation online was whether he had, why you would use that to mark a property that, you know, you've heard about the crosses outside as...
The one that I know is a spray paint to show if someone has a dog or not.
Yeah.
Because all the dog thefts that were going on.
Yeah, and things like that. So why you would use oil, but...
You wouldn't.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense, but they're pretty sure it was him. They didn't track down any maintenance workers or something that maybe had, you know,
left oil on.
Cacan didn't just left something about, so we don't know why he did that. But yeah, I'll dig out the pictures and I'll put the pictures on social media and you'll see what I mean about this guy. He looks... You would cross over the road to avoid him. Yeah, and especially on a dark night. There is something quite Neanderthal about him when you look at his picture.
I know he's setting people on fire, but do you think something traumatic happened with fire? Because for some reason he burnt that kid's genitals.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's a cigarette or a lighter or something.
He said a cigarette, but it could have equally been a lighter.
Yeah. So he's got to think about burning people.
Yeah.
It's very loosely makes me think about, I think it's one of the countries in Africa where they kind of messed up with their sentencing. Anything that was below murder got essentially sentenced the same as murder. So all that happened was people would commit a crime and then kill the victim. Because then...
Got nothing to lose.
Because you're going
to
get sentenced just the same. And then you've now removed any chance of being identified by a victim. And that poses a weird question, doesn't it? Where you have to have sentencing intentionally lighter so that you don't just amplify what they're going to do so they don't get sentenced or likely to be found.
The cannibalism thing, why Claire, but she was 40, maybe it was something he'd fantasized about for a while and he... wanted to try it. We know he ate it, but we don't know if he cooked it.
Is that what he said? He said he ate it.
And they couldn't find it. Like I said, it goes back to the missing nipples.
I mean, why not? You're already assaulting people and murdering them. Why wouldn't the next logical leap be to try to eat someone or eat parts of them?
But if I was in...
And then he's a chef as well, which is weird. I wouldn't let him with knives and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, if you were in Broadmoor and you find out that he's done that, you wouldn't want to eat anything he's cooked anyway.
Depending on the people in there, they're probably kind of curious what it was like, so that might actually be a good thing that he might have eaten people and it worked out good. But yeah.
And finally, the victims in this case that should not be forgotten. Claire Letchford, aged 40. Beryl Dawn O'Connor, aged 75.
And that's the end of the podcast. It's a shorter one today. but you can find other content on Patreon.
Yes.
I'm tempted to say at the start of the podcast that today's episode is sponsored by our Patreon. You can find blah, blah, blah. You know, get people ahead. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Murder Me Monday Podcast and email us at murdermemondaypodcast@gmail.com. Leave reviews, comments for algorithms, all that good stuff. And I guess we'll see you next time.
Yes. Bye.
Much love. Peace.